Hello there, Bernie Miklos back with you on another Bernie Miklos show on my YouTube channel. Happy 2025. I hope it's going to be a fantastic year for you all. Been pretty good 2024. We're going to make it even better, all of us, in 2025, right? I don't know what to say about the Cardinals, though, for 2025. I like the way the Blues are playing, certainly. But anyway, let's get to the business of the day. I'm going to talk about Nolan Arenado. And before you click off and just say, I don't want to hear about Nolan Arenado, I get it. However, I thought because we are into January of 2025, and I think generally speaking, maybe the last few days, people just haven't been paying as much attention to sports, specifically the Nolan Arenado situation. I'm talking about Cardinals fans. So I thought it was good to just do a little reset. Where do things stand and what can we expect? And the only reason I'm saying this, the only reason I think we should do a reset is because I really would have thought by now he would have been traded. And based on what John Mozeliak was saying at the baseball winter meetings in the second week of December, you know, he declared their intention to trade Arenado. It looked like a lot of teams were interested. They were very on the doorstep of a deal with Houston. Arenado used his no trade to veto the deal, which is his right to do. And then after that, things have gone kind of quiet. I mean, there was talk that the Yankees offered Marcus Stroman for Arenado. Some of you said Stroman, oh, that would have been good for the Cardinals. We can talk about that at another time. I've replied to that in the comments. I don't agree with that, but whatever. All opinions are welcome. And the Stroman thing is because the Yankees could dump his salary. So there's like kind of dumping one salary for another is what it comes down to, at least for 2025. So, but things are pretty quiet. Things are pretty quiet. And a lot of it will have to do with whether Alex Bregman signs anytime soon and, you know, doing a scan of all the news and informed speculation. Yesterday was looking at some stuff. So it looks like the Tigers are maybe the front runner for Bregman and probably are prepared to offer him more money than anyone else. We'll see. He can play third base for his former manager in Houston, AJ Hinch. He can play that for the Tigers, give him some leadership. Red Sox probably still in there. If they lose out to Bregman, maybe they'll be interested in Arenado. I think the Mets are a little bit of a sleeper team for Bregman. How can they be a sleeper team with Steve Cohen, their owner? He pretty much goes out and buys what he wants. But I'm just saying, there's the Bregman things have come down to, you know, maybe the Tigers and the Red Sox and the Mets. The best that we can tell, anyway. There could be a surprise. I've seen some people write, which is just silly. Well, the Tigers signed Gleyber Torres to a 1-year deal, $15 million contract, the former Yankees second baseman. So that takes the Tigers out of the market. What? Gleyber Torres is not going to play third base for the Tigers. The one interesting thing, a possible offshoot, if you will. Let's say Bregman does go to the Tigers. So think about it in these terms. The Yankees have not been in the Bregman hunt, but they've been, I think, you know, they continue to kind of check in on with the Cardinals on Nolan Arenado. But if the Tigers land Bregman, which again, there's certainly a possibility, that means like, their young third baseman, Jace Young, however you say his name, and I apologize. Jace Young, that probably means, you know, he's headed elsewhere, or at least he would be available. And why wouldn't the Yankees be interested in him? He's got potential to be pretty damn good. Matt Vierling, native St. Louis, and he plays the outfield. He can play some third base. He could be a candidate for a move if the Tigers sign Alex Bregman. So things will get hopping, and it isn't just necessarily on the Arenado market. Just in general, things will get hopping once Bregman settles in with his new team. And heck, by the time you see this video, maybe later Thursday, who knows? There could be a deal. So we'll wait and see. I wanted to talk about some of the ramifications of Arenado staying. Like I would have said, and I don't remember exactly what I thought in terms of putting a percentage on it, but back when Mozeliak was talking in the winter meetings, I would have thought, and I'm being conservative here, I thought maybe it would be about 90% that Arenado would be traded. And I think that's conservative because I didn't say 99% or whatever. So 90% that he would be traded. If you ask me, as I sit here today on the second day of the new year, I hadn't thought about it all that much, but 50-50? Is it now a 50-50 proposition that he'll get traded by the Cardinals? Because he does have the veto power. They can't just send them anywhere, right? And at least some teams, we don't know how many that would normally maybe under routine circumstances be interested in Arenado. They're not going to want to take on the $64 million that remain on his contract. It's $74 million. But again, the Colorado Rockies are picking up $10 million of that as part of the original deal that sent him to St. Louis. So the Cardinals might have to kick in more money. Again, you all know this, but I'm just resetting and just kind of reminding us of where this stands. The market for Arenado does not appear to be robust, is a good way to put it, but there's always stuff that happens. There's always stuff below the radar that we're not quite aware of. And I still think, you know, the Yankees are at least in the picture, depending on how much money the Cardinals are willing to eat. Anyway, so I'd say 50-50, maybe even a little less than that. I mean, we get to the end of the week. We get to the middle of January. I'll have to adjust those probability percentages. So anyway, let's talk about some of the ramifications of Arenado staying. Okay, it could change quite a few things, and I don't think any of them are really minor. And stick around for the end, because I'm going to talk about one of the final things I'm going to mention and talk about in this video. It's pretty interesting because we talk about, you know, the Cardinals want Nolan Gorman to play third base. And if Arenado gets traded, that's going to be the deal. He'll play third base. John Mozeliak has all but said that. They want him to get 650 plate appearances, Nolan Gorman, in 2025. And I'm all on board with that. You got to find out once and for all, instead of all these people want to give up on him already at age 24. No, it's just, come on. Let's stay in the real world here. Anyway, but I'm going to give you a couple interesting things comparing Gorman and Arenado. I know that sounds weird, but stick with me. I'll get to it later. I promise. If Arenado's back at third base, it means Gorman won't be at third base. Gorman will probably have to go back to second base. So, yeah, he could DH, of course. But if he goes back to second base, that means fewer games at second base, a lot fewer games at second base than Brendan Donovan, fewer opportunities at second base for the rookie Thomas Tseggiasi, who could be used in a utility role. But if you know, Arenado's playing third base, Brendan Donovan will, in effect, be that super utility guy again, and I could see him in left field a lot. There's another layer to that, again, as I work my way through this. So my point being is if Gorman has to go to second base and Donovan would be part of the second base mix, but Donovan would be the super utility guy again who could play all kinds of positions, as you know, that means maybe Thomas Tseggiasi doesn't even make the big club coming out of spring training. It's too early to say for sure, but I'm just saying that's one possibility. If you have your super utility guy, do you need two of those guys? Although flexibility is a positive thing. But if Arenado stays, it just complicates trying to work all this out about who goes where, what role does each person have. There's no simple math here. You know, you're going to see guys bouncing around and it's just not going to be this clean fit is what I'm trying to say. One thing I've mentioned a lot, and I know when I do it, you know, I come across as sort of kook or whatever, which is okay. The Cardinals, let me repeat myself. The Cardinals are under no obligation whatsoever to use Arenado as the regular starter at third base. Obviously, they're a better team defensively with him. There's no question about it. But suppose he played 100 games instead of 145 or 150. Just saying. This is a hypothetical. The Cardinals could make sure that Gorman could get a 50 to 55 starts at third base if they really wanted to. Maybe Arenado DHs a little, you know, a few more starts for Gorman. But it wouldn't be an ideal situation. And I know this. I mean, Arenado doesn't exude positive energy anyway. And if he's sitting on the bench a lot, you know, good luck with that manager, Ollie Marmol. Good luck. Wish you well on that one, having to deal with him. But the Cardinals could make sure Gorman gets some starts, some regular reps at third base if they want to do this, if it is a reset year. But Arenado wouldn't be happy sitting in the dugout, that's for sure. That'd be the first time that's ever happened. So anyway, we'll get back to Gorman and Arenado later. Okay, the second ramification, if that's the word, well, we already mentioned this. Okay, let me move ahead a little bit so I don't repeat myself. But again, it all comes down to Gorman having to be redeployed to another position, which would be second base. So one of the things about this, though, another possible ramification is that if Donovan is going to be super utility with Arenado staying, if he stays, if he's going to be super utility, we may see Donovan a lot in left field. That way, maybe they keep Sejacy on the big club. Again, we've got many miles to go before we've got to make roster decisions. But Donovan has played left field very well, actually. And Donovan in left field could mean you could use Lars Nootbaar in center field. Now, is Lars Nootbaar as good defensively as Michael Ciani in center field? Well, no. Of course not. But he's been average. He's been at times slightly above average. I'm talking about Newt in center field. Him running around in center field covering all that ground, does that increase the possibility of yet another injury for Lars Nootbaar? Probably does. That's what history tells us. But the Cardinals could actually have a better lineup. If you're looking for an upside to Arenado being the third baseman, Gorman back at second, DH and in this and that, Donovan in left field, Nootbaar in center field, and then you have Jordan Walker and they're committed to him in right field. The Cardinals outfield, which on paper, because of Ollie Marmol's absolute obsession with Michael Ciani, the Cardinals don't project to have a very good offense in their outfield collectively, all the outfielders, you know, in the mix. But if they realign it a little bit and they play Nootbaar in center, and this assumes he stays healthy and this assumes he plays solid defense, doesn't have to be outstanding, and there is such a thing as defensive replacements, and you might be asking yourself, well, Bernie, I thought you're a big Victor Scott guy. I am. But, you know, you keep reading or hearing statements from Ollie Marmol talking about Ciani, and Ollie Marmol even said, oh, we got to do what's best for Victor, which is all but saying, yeah, well, Victor probably needs more time in center field, but he's probably the best place for that is Memphis. That's basically what he's saying. My point is, I'm not talking much about Victor Scott because I don't think the Cardinals are really all that thrilled about the idea of playing him a lot in center field at the big league level, at least the first part of the season, at least maybe the first half of the season. That's why, okay? In other words, we can all holler and scream like, well, this guy should be here. That guy should be there. That's the end of it. Well, we don't fill out the lineup card. That's my point. Anyway, so the Cardinals could actually get an offensive boost by having an outfield that features Donovan, maybe sometimes Burleson in left field, Nootbaar in center field, and Walker in right field. And then you would have Ciani as kind of the roving defensive specialist in the outfield. But boy, the Cardinals are absolutely obsessed with Ciani. And I like him. I feel bad sort of being Mr. Grump about it, but I think they're getting carried away by about a 30-game stretch where Ciani actually hit very well before he got hurt later in the year. Maybe there's more than I'm assuming offensively there. And I was very happy to point out how well he was doing there for the last month or so, maybe a little more than that before he got hurt. Anyway, let's move on. So the other ramification, obviously, Bill DeWitt Jr. and John Mozeliak are slashing payroll this offseason, whether we like it or not, they are. And that's part of this so-called reset. The Cardinals owe Arenado $64 million guaranteed over the next three seasons. As we know, the Cardinals would eat a good portion of that $64 million if they can work out a trade, if they really, really want to get him out of here, and if Arenado wants to go to where they want to send him. But doing so would be the best way to go if they can get that done, because if Arenado stays for 2025 and DeWitt and Mozeliak are determined to still cut payroll, well, that means you're going to have to cut the payroll elsewhere, probably moving a pitcher or two. It could be Eric Fetty, but Eric Fetty is a starting pitcher, would have he'd be traded, and he's got real value. But as far as a payroll slash, he's only going to make $7.5 million in 2025. So I don't think that that would do it as far as, you know, having a hold on the Arenado's salary commitments and trying to offset that by moving someone. You can just see what Arenado is going to make in 2025 and 2026. But 2025, you know, Fetty makes a lot less. I mean, a lot less. Ryan Helsley, final season of arbitration. I've seen the estimates or projections. He'll be about $8 million or so. So if you have you trade him and you trade Fetty, that's about, let's say, $15.5 million. That still doesn't offset Arenado's salary for 2025. Steven Matz, $12.5 million. Now you're getting somewhere. If you trade Fetty, you trade Matz. Hypotheticals here. Matz is $12.5 million, unless the Cardinals have to eat some of that. That would be off the books. It's the final year of a four-year, $44 million deal. But can he stay healthy? Were other teams willing to gamble on the fact that he may not stay healthy? Maybe they'll ask the Cardinals to digest a lot of the salary there. I don't know. We'll have to wait it out. But he is a risky acquisition for any team that is thinking about Steven Matz. It's a one-year liability, though. In other words, they wouldn't be stuck with a long-term contract the way the Cardinals were after they signed him. So it's only 1 year. So some teams would be willing to take the risk because their liability is limited, potential liability, to 1 year. Sonny Gray's got a no-trade clause, and he wants to stay with the Cardinals, and I admire that. And Sonny Gray's really good, and I'm going to do a video about him coming up. I think it's now fashionable to talk about, you know, Sonny Gray being some kind of average guy or whatever. Sonny Gray was really, really good last year, except, I mean, his home run fly ball rate was just an outlier. It's never been that crazy in terms of bad. I think things will normalize in 2025, but we'll talk about Sonny Gray at a later date. He wants to stay with the Cardinals. He wants to help be the leader. I admire that, but here's the deal. He's due $25 million in 2025 and then $35 million in 2026. I'm sure the Cardinals, if they could get a good return, would be willing to offload that contract. But again, it's up to Sonny Gray. He's got the veto power, right? Could Gray reconsider? I kind of doubt it. Maybe unless Atlanta Braves want him, something like that. He lives in Nashville where his family is and all that. Atlanta's pretty close, right? So we'll see. Here's another silver lining. I mentioned the silver lining in the context. If Arenado stays, Donovan plays a lot of left field. That means maybe Nootbaar playing in center field, give you more, a little oomph offensively from your outfield in a collective basis. Another silver lining is if the Cardinals do trade Fetty, I'd like to call him Fetty. Why not? If they do trade Fetty and they get a pretty good return, and we're talking prospects, right? They'd have more rotation space for some of the young pitchers they want to look at. Listen, Quinn Matthews is going to be here, barring injuries, and knock on wood, you know, you hate even to bring up injuries, right? But Quinn Matthews is going to be here. He was recently named, you know, Baseball America's Minor League Pitcher of the Year in all of the minor leagues, every organization, and just has really outstanding stuff. And I can see where the Cardinals would want to, they'll at least, quote, give him a chance to make the big club in spring training. They probably want to give him a few more starts at Memphis because he did get cuffed around there late last season. Transition. It had been a long year. I'm not surprised that his numbers weren't as good, but the dude just zoomed through four different levels of the minor leagues last season, and he is just about – he's ready. It's just – he's on the doorstep. It's just a matter of when the Cardinals decide, come on, let's go. But, you know, this isn't just some guy. This is an elite pitching prospect. So they're going to have to create a space for him in that rotation anyway. And if they don't, then I don't know what the hell this reset is all about in 2025. If you're not going to make room for the best minor league pitcher in existence in 2024, then again, what the heck is this all about, right? So we'll see how the Cardinals handle this. And you can't rule out the fact that Tink Hentz will be ready maybe the second half of 2025 to step into the major league rotation. The Cardinals definitely want to take a look at Michael McGreevy. They, I think, would want to take a look at Gordon Graceffo. I don't know where Zach Thompson fits in all this, because the Cardinals have all but ruined him with their incompetence as far as, oh, he's a starter. No, he's a reliever. Oh, no, he's a starter. Oh, he's a reliever. You know, who knows with these people? That's why, Chaim Bloom, you can't get here in charge soon enough. Can't have that transition, the baton being passed soon enough. And maybe they'll stop ruining pitchers, okay? And I'll repeat what I said earlier. An obvious benefit to having Arenado, of course, is his defense. So I've said this. We've all said this. You don't need me to say this. He's not at his peak level defensively. He's down from that truly elite level. He's still plenty damn good at the hot corner. His range is still really good. Defensive run save on the plus side. He was a gold glove finalist in National League at the position last year. He's still really good defensively. But again, if the Cardinals can't find an approved trade partner, then I'd say it's up to Arenado to be a great, great teammate and a positive source of energy, unlike what we've seen, if he suits up for the 2025 Cardinals. He vetoed a trade. He may veto another trade. He has every right to do it. I don't hold it against him. But if he wants to stay in St. Louis rather than go elsewhere, again, it's his call. The Cardinals gave him the no trade, or they ratified the no trade, because I think he had it in Colorado. That's part of the big contract that the Cardinals inherited. But the Cardinals went along with that. So I think if Arenado comes back, man, it's like he came back because he didn't see any alternatives that really fired him up. I mean, he was flirting with the Dodgers on social media. He was flirting with the Yankees on social media. And, you know, if his heart gets sad and he has to come back to St. Louis because his dream teams didn't make a bid on him, well, he owes it to the organization. He owes it to those young players. He owes it to his teammates to try to be a leader and to try to be a positive source of everything going on. I mean, you can't have negativity in the middle of a 2025 season that has been set aside to go with a younger group of players. And part of that is having younger Cardinals emerge as team leaders. That's really important for the future. Now, here's one thing I wanted to throw out at you, because I was surprised by what I found. And I have discovered doing these videos, and this is just true. This is the way things are in the world. It's no big deal. But I want to state this up front. People tend to hear what they want to hear. So I want to say this up front. When I'm comparing Gorman and Arenado, okay, I'm asking you to cut me a break and pay attention to this part of what I'm going to say. Because if you don't, then I'm going to get comments saying like, well, Bernie, I can't believe you didn't say that Arenado is much better defensively than Gorman. Of course he is. I don't know that anybody that has ever watched baseball would have to tell anybody that. But again, if you look at Arenado and Gorman, and I'm talking about Gorman as a third baseman, of course, big advantage defensively for Nolan Arenado, what he means to the Cardinals defensively. Gorman does have third base is his natural position. I think he'd be fine there, but it's hard for me to say below average, above average, until we actually see him play in a return to his natural position. Plate discipline, it's no contest, all right? Arenado is a tremendous, even at his advanced age and with a big decline in power, Arenado is an outstanding contact hitter. He doesn't swing and miss much. He doesn't strike out much based on today's standards. And, of course, if you compare a potential Gorman strikeout rate and match it with or compare it to Arenado's strikeout rate, like I said, there's no contest. Clearly, Arenado will put the ball in play more often than Gorman, which isn't always necessarily a good thing because Arenado hits a lot more ground balls than he used to. He does not pull balls in the air the way he needs to restore some home run power. He's a pull hitter, and he's got to get the ball in the air, hit line drives, fly balls. And I've talked about this, told you about it. His pull rate and his fly ball line drive rate have been going down, steadily going down. So I don't know that Nolan Arenado hitting a lot of ground balls is going to do you much, right? Yeah, it'd be better than having Nolan Gorman strike out 40% of the time or whatever. But I've made my point about that. Arenado, fewer strikeouts, much better defense, much better contact rate, and a guy that has been an all-star and still has some of that talent left, not as much offensively. And I know people obsess over batting average. I don't care about it. I really don't. Now, the plate discipline thing is interesting because one thing Gorman does that Arenado doesn't do, Gorman will draw you some walks. I mean, he's been double-digit walk rate figures. And when he's head is squared up and he's not swinging at everything they throw at him, they could roll a, when he's going bad, they could roll a bowling ball out there from the mound and he'd swing at the bowling ball, you know, on the ground. He'd be swinging at it. In fact, with the bowling ball, by the time it gets home plate, he'd probably go swing, like three swings at the same bowling ball rolling towards him. So, but when he's got a clear headspace, and he's trying to work better at bats. Gorman's power is scary, and pitchers don't want to feed him. And so if he stays away from chasing, big if, he will hit for a lot of power. He will hit for more power than Nolan Arenado. And you say, well, what do you mean by that? Are you sure? Yeah, I'm sure, because I was looking it up the other day. So again, Arenado, because of his batting average, so it does matter. I'm just saying I don't care about that as much as some other things. Arenado, of course, is going to hit for a higher average than Gorman. He's going to strike out less than Gorman. He's going to put the ball in play more than Gorman. But Gorman's going to walk more. But the bottom line is, over the last two seasons, Arenado does have a higher on-base percentage than Gorman, but it's not as large as you would think because, like I said, Arenado doesn't draw walks, not many anyway. So I think over the last two seasons, his on-base percentage is about 18 points higher than Gorman's. Again, I want to note this. I want this to be a fair reading of all the stats when I'm comparing these two. But here are some things you may not know, and I'll be honest. I didn't know this for sure. This is what I suspected, but I didn't know this for sure until I looked it up late last week, right? As bad as Gorman had been over his last couple months with the Cardinals last season before getting demoted to Memphis, he still has outperformed Arenado in some hitting categories since the start of the 2023 season. And again, Gorman was pretty good in 2023. He had some valleys, he had some slumps, but he was pretty good. He managed to fight his way out of them, unlike 2024. But since the start of the 2023 season, right, the last two seasons of ball, slugging percentage, Gorman 441, Arenado 426. And the difference, I think, was, we'll put it to you this way, Arenado's slugging percentage declined to a career low 394 last year. Gorman, when he makes contacts, got a pretty awesome slugging percentage, but making contact is a problem. But let me get back on this. I'm sorry. Slugging percentage over the last two seasons, Gorman 441, Arenado 426. Home runs over the last two seasons, Gorman 46, Arenado 42. And that's significant considering that since the start of 2023, Gorman has 367 fewer at-bats than Nolan Arenado, yet he is out-homered Arenado 46 to 42. What about runs batted in? The only way to do this, because of the discrepancy in the number of bats that each hitter has had, over the last two seasons, Gorman drove in, and this includes his down times where he was really, really bad, but he drove in a run on average. He drove on a run every six at-bats, With Arenado, the last two seasons, he's driven in a run basically every seven at bats. And again, driving in runs, a lot of that has to do with opportunities. I know that, but I'm just pointing out the basic, you know, RBI ratio here. Gorman has a better RBI ratio than Arenado over the last two seasons. There isn't that much difference between Arenado and Gorman in OPS since the start of 2023. Arenado's OPS over the last 2 years, 746. That is only 4 points higher than Gorman's 742 over that time. And if you look at the fancy pants stat, weighted runs created plus, it's WRC plus, jabba, jabba, jabba. No, basically it's a better way than OPS plus to analyze hitters based on park effects, league effects, everything else. The last two seasons, Gorman and Arenado are essentially tied in terms of what the deal is with weighted runs created plus, which is the go-to metric for more and more people. It's basically the same. So in terms of their offensive value, even with the strikeouts and everything else, OPS, which is more standard, or weighted runs created plus, which is park and league adjusted runs created, they're basically, their value of hitters over the last 2 years is basically the same. And again, you don't have to buy that. That's fine. I'm just passing along the information. Well, here's another thing too, because you might say, and again, I'm not doing straw man stuff here. I'm just saying, I would have said, well, but don't you need, you're going to want Arenado in there because, he's got a, Gorman is sort of a work in progress as far as hitting lefty pitchers, because Gorman bats left, Arenado bats right, which you already know. So at least you can't have Gorman playing every day because he can't hit lefties, or he's not proven that he can hit lefties. I think I mentioned this on a recent video. Do you have any idea how bad Arenado has been against left-handed pitchers the last couple years? And granted, 70% of the plate appearances come against right-handed pitchers. But there are key times where you got to go against lefties, especially in the bullpen matchups late in games. But Arenado against left-handed pitchers over the last 2 years has a 654 OPS. And some other stats are really damning. He's barely hitting over 200 against them. Gorman's OPS against lefties, even though he bats left-handed last 2 years, 712. So his OPS against left-handed pitchers over the last two seasons, Nolan Gorman, is 58 points higher than Nolan Arenado's against lefty pitching. So we'll see what develops. I wanted to just throw in some of that because I found it interesting. There are differences, some of which go in Arenado's favor, comparing their offensive profiles. But Gorman has some advantages over Arenado as well. That's based on the facts, my friends. And yeah, strikeout. Yes, I know that is always going to be the thing hanging overhead Nolan Gorman until he shows he can cut that thing down to an acceptable level. And that's part of why he needs to play and he needs to have 600-plus at-bats, plate appearances in 2025. So anyway, I don't know where this is going to end, but as time goes on, I more and more think about it in terms of like, well, he might be staying, so let's take a look at that. That's what I've tried to do by explaining some of the ramifications, but also bringing to light some statistical things that tell you if Gorman plays third base next season and Arenado doesn't, they're not going to lose as much offense as you think. That's my point. They're just not. And the other thing that's interesting about Nolan Arenado, the last 2 years when he has started at third base, the Cardinals, and it's not his fault, but I'm just saying this does kind of coincide with an offensive decline. Cardinals are like 16 games under 500 when he starts. I did not look up Gorman's thing, and I should have. I will include that in a comment section underneath this video when I have the opportunity to respond. But it's an interesting situation, and I don't know how it's going to end. I do know it's time for me to end this video, however. Thank you, as always, for watching The Bernie Miklas Show. Please subscribe if you haven't, and leave your comments, because I like to read all of them, even when I don't have time to respond. Thank you very much.